This is UN and Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Matt Wells. In this week's programme, a South Sudan official tells us the continent's future depends on empowering its youth. And we'll hear about the importance of legal definitions separating crimes of sexual violence from adultery in Sudan's Darfur region for basic human rights. But first, space-based applications and technologies are helping the UN Development Programme, or UNDP, to deliver its projects in a faster, more efficient and safer way, according to a senior official there. Bruce McCarron, director of UNDP's Office of Operations, Legal and Technology Services, cites the example of using satellite imagery to monitor the reconstruction of buildings in Mali destroyed by extremists. Mr. McCarron was speaking at a conference on how the space sector can contribute to achieving the Sustainable Development Goals, held recently in Dubai. The event was organised by the United Arab Emirates. Mr. McCarron spoke to Deanne Penn.
Well, it's very important for UNDP to deliver its programmes worldwide and to do it faster, more efficient and in a safer way. Now, space enables us to monitor our projects in a very safe way, and so we don't have to have people on the ground. So, for instance, in Mali, where we're rehabilitating facilities that have been destroyed by terrorism, we can get regular updates from space to look at progress in terms of the rehabilitation.
Thank you for reminding us about UNDP's work there in Mali. I think it was in Timbuktu, is that correct?
Yeah, Timbuktu, yeah.
I guess that's satellite imagery you're using to help with the reconstruction. Tell us more about that.
Well, this is actually one of the earliest forays into Earth observation. So we engaged with UNUSA, and they've helped us to get imagery from different space agencies to help us monitor these projects on the ground. And so that with that one success story, we've now been able to do the same thing in 24 different locations across the globe, and we really anticipate even much further use of Earth observation as a tool. Now, of course, UNDPs for years, like peacekeeping, have been using satellite communications, and that's essential to our operations as well.
And I also wanted to talk about the person on the ground, though, the benefit for them. I mean, they don't know that there's a satellite that took a picture of their community prior to it being bombed, but they know that thanks to things being rebuilt in their community, maybe the market comes back or something. I mean, how are the practical applications of space helping the average person in these communities?
I think the knowledge and the understanding of the impact is growing, and through these sorts of applications that we're now starting to, I refer to it as a force multiplier. It's enabling us to multiply the effect that we're having on the ground. So there is a direct impact definitely on the people on the ground, the people in need that we're supporting, but also the governments that we're supporting as well. And so much so that the governments are seeing these benefits and are wanting to get involved in this technology as well. So I think there's a lot of area for growth. And in fact, during this conference, I've had a good opportunity to talk to not just the United Nations, but also space agencies who are very interested in how this technology is applied back on Earth, back on the ground, because that fits in so well with the delivery of the SDGs.
UNDP's Bruce McCarron talking to Deanne Penn in Dubai. If Africa's young people are not encouraged to become the leaders of tomorrow, it will only hurt those in power today. That's the opinion of Robert Ladu Luki, chairperson of the National Land Commission in South Sudan. He was in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, recently for a UN-backed conference that looked at young people's access to land. Mr. Ladu Luki spoke to Ernest Cho about his proposal to enshrine youth empowerment in national constitutions.
This has been a very important workshop, especially the theme that includes the support and helping the youth to come up. If you want the country to develop, you engage the youth and actually prepare them to be leaders of tomorrow. But if you fail to prepare them to be leaders of tomorrow, they will be distractors of your leadership today. I come from a country that is, you know, going through a terrible stage of armed conflict. The people who are fighting are the youth. So if you don't engage them, they will engage themselves with whatever, taking other methods of survival. Now the gun to them is the answer. So by involving the youth, you will actually make proper use of the energy that they have towards development and progress.
So you've participated in a number of workshops and sessions during this conference. What's your major takeaway?
First of all, the experience sharing. I'm now able to know about the experience of different countries. The session that I have just come out, we are presenting, you know, papers on the progress of land administration and governance. Since I've been the chairperson of this commission for the last 12 years, every time I feel I get more experience. Here now, I know how to empower the youth. It's not enough to give them land. That's why I was pushing an idea that it has to be enshrined in the constitutions and the law that a certain percentage of the budget should be allocated for youth empowerment so that they are given loans, they are given properties to run, a business to run, not necessarily on land, but other connected issues. It could be, you know, vegetables, it could be, you know, developing fish ponds and other issues that would generate money. And by keeping them busy, that would help. So I'm walking away with the youth empowerment. We have crossed that stage. Maybe our time was very unfortunate. They did not do it for us. So if they did not do it for us, we should do it for some others who are coming next. We shouldn't be greedy and people who are not actually far-sighted. Because today they are youth, tomorrow they are leaders. So if they are empowered now, by the time they reach our stage, they will be better leaders than we are now.
Robert Ladu-Luki of South Sudan's National Land Commission. Transforming the human rights situation in Darfur requires clear and distinctive definitions of sexual violence and adultery. That's according to the Human Rights Section Chief for the region's UN mission UNAMID, Isha Difan, who explained that separating these two societal issues encourages women to come forward with accounts of sexual violence without fear of being accused of adultery. In the last 8 years, UNAMID's Human Rights Section, along with other international organisations and civil society, have helped bring about some major changes in Sudanese criminal law. Ms. Difan spoke to Seti Obudi about her team's contribution.
In terms of advocacy in the change of the law relating to sexual violence, in the last, I should say, 8 years, several advocates in government, in the international community and in civil society have been advocating for a change in the Criminal Procedure Act relating to sexual violence. And the key element is to try and address sexual violence and the definition of rape separately from adultery. That's a major change in the Criminal Law Act of Sudan. And it means that women can now come forward and bring a criminal claim in sexual violence before they wouldn't come forward because it will attract allegations of adultery.
Looking at the current human rights situation in Darfur, what are your main concerns?
Issues that have already been addressed in the new resolution of the Security Council mandating UNAMID's work up to next year. And they are also reflected in a lot of the Human Rights Council reports, especially the Independent Experts report. And then I think I'll see these concerns in four areas. One is the improvement of or progress in the area of accountability and the reduction of impunity, especially for certain security services. The second is now that there is unilateral cessation of hostilities by the parties to the conflict, one hopes that there is sufficient progress on the ground for the lifting of the emergency laws, because that also would produce a conducive environment for the communities to get on with their work. And maybe the third area, and I think this is where the issue of addressing the root causes of the conflict comes in, and this area is the situation of IDPs. Even though there's a reduction in the fighting between the parties to the conflict, we still have at least 2.1 million IDPs. And my concern is that we look into the root causes so that IDPs are able to return in a dignified manner and go back to their ancestral lands where that is possible, or decide what they want to do. And then lastly is perhaps look at how the government can continue to address the proliferation of small arms. There, it has started now, and we're looking at seeing how that is going to be managed going forward.
UNAMID's Isha Difan speaking there to Seti Obudi. Well, you've been listening to UN and Africa. Thanks for joining us today here at the United Nations. I'm Matt Wells.